I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. School's out for the summer. Months of remote learning this year have left many kids lagging behind. City school officials have announced that they won't require struggling students to repeat a grade next year. My guest today is Dr. Sonia Sonalesis, the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. Now that the district has seen the transition from online learning to a hybrid model, what can students and teachers expect when they return to full-time in-person learning in the fall? Will any aspects of hybrid learning remain once kids are back in the classroom? Are snow days or days off when it's too hot in unair-conditioned buildings a thing of the past? Dr. Sonia Sonalesis joins me today on Midday after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you're with us today. My guest is Dr. Sonia Sonalesis, the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. Summer school is underway in the city 4 days a week, and the need for many students to address learning loss that arose during this past tumultuous academic year is great. By the end of last month, 65% of secondary students and half of elementary students were failing at least one class. When school resumes in the fall, all students and teachers will return to their classrooms. So what can they expect then? What were the lessons learned this year about incorporating online resources that will inform the district's approach to teaching and learning in the future? Have the problems that many students encountered getting online this year been addressed? Plenty to talk about with Dr. Sonalesis, who joins us on Zoom. Welcome back. Good to speak with you.
Good to be back, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about summer school. Are there more kids than normal enrolled in summer school? Is this a different summer in any way?
No, it's a great question. So in one way that it continues to be different that we started last year is we'll have a virtual option for families, as well as expanded in-person options. One of the things that Baltimore City Schools has benefited from is the fact that Baltimore City has actually had a long tradition relative to other school districts of not just doing summer school, but doing summer with partners who take it beyond just, you know, coming in and taking an additional class. So we'll be expanding offerings for young people to engage in the arts and dance. And with a number of our arts partners, we're able to do that. There'll also be opportunities, you know, for young people to engage in STEM and robotics activities. And so we'll be building on those at the same time that, you know, we have academic recovery opportunities for our high school students who might have just been short of graduation requirements from some of the challenges that they've encountered, that we've all encountered over the last year and a half. And so there'll be those opportunities. We have a number of young people. We continue to partner with MOED with regards to employment opportunities. One of the more robust teen or adolescent employment efforts really around the country. And so we'll continue to partner with them on that. And young people are excited, I think, to have opportunities not just to earn money, but also to link that with going to school. We're expanding our pre-advanced placement opportunities. One of the things that has continued to be true is more and more of our high schools are really building out advanced placement opportunities. So we'll have some of those in the summer. And for our little people, our littlest people, I should say, for our pre-K, K students, just a number of activities to like orient young people to what school looks like, right? We now have first graders who will be entering this fall who have only had a half a year of pre-K and virtual kindergarten. And so we are really developing with our early childhood office and our early partners activities that are really oriented towards, you know, the power of play for younger kids, as well as a lot of the readiness in some of the more core academic areas like reading. So they're really, it's expanded opportunities. Some are virtual We had some real success around virtual tutoring this year, and that, you know, we have families who still want to take advantage of that. So we've tried to expand, but also keep options open and have a real emphasis on, you know, not just kind of pen, paper, or just computers all day, but actually the things that that make learning fun for young people too.
And in terms of, you know, of mitigating the problems that some kids, and evidently it's, you know, quite a few kids, I mean, many thousands of kids experience this year because of the complications around virtual learning. When it comes to the so-called learning loss, what's your assessment of how big a problem that is, and what's the best way to remediate that? What's the best way to get the kids who are suffering that problem back up to speed and back, you know, competitive with the rest of their classmates?
No, sure. So, well, one of the things, Tom, that we're really honing in on, we've heard a lot of this feedback from families, from teachers, is we're going to have a very big emphasis on individualization in ways that the system is not done at scale, I think ever, really. And that really is, one, making sure that we have accurate and informed and various forms of information and data about how young people are doing and what those challenges have been. We can't just assume because one data point says that a young person has lost ground, that in and of itself is going to be sufficient for a teacher or a school community to help move that student. And, you know, we have profiles, and we've talked about this before. You know, we have former honor students who, because of home instability, because just of housing instability, have not been able to log on for portions of the year. So does that mean that we now just move that child out of that advanced math track? We have young people who, you know, were engaged, would be engaged to return if we had more connection to kind of real career. And that's what young people are saying. So part of, I use all of that to say that what we are really looking to prioritize is multiple streams of information so that we have deeper profiles of students. With that, what we're also saying, and those are some of the communication we've had about our individualized student plans and other things. With that, one of the things we also know is that this year is going to require and call for teachers to go deeper with essential standards. And so what we're looking at doing, and we're not the only school district doing this across the country, but a number of districts are finding and placing our resources in how do we narrow the standards that folks are focusing on to the most essential to accelerate young people more quickly. And there's a new study that Zurn did with TNTP around the success of this, particularly with young people who are already behind. And so we'll be doing that. And then our own teachers have said to us, particularly in early literacy, that the investment in technology has actually allowed them to maximize kind of the technology in a way that allows us to target kind of the individual skills that students might be missing with using technology to adapt more quickly rather than relying on one teacher to hold six or seven different groups and that be the only way that young people can catch up. So first, starting with a real complete picture of where students are, not just based on one or two test scores, but matching that to what we know young people have been through, what their families tell us are their greatest needs, and then matching the instructional supports, and I'd say the cultural supports, Tom. Like we know, you know, and I know as a mom, like one of my daughters was really depressed around January, February, when she got to go back to school, participate in the school musical, start painting again, you know, suddenly the grades started going back up. And it didn't mean that she needed, you know, to meet with a psychologist every day. In her case, it was just being part, again, of a nurturing in-person community that could attend to her talents, her gifts, her interests, and every child deserves that. So I would say we're starting with the plans and then we're moving out, making sure we're looking at students as whole students and making sure we have those pieces in place as well.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today, Dr. Sonia Sonalesis. She's the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. To join our conversation with Dr. Sonalesis, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. You can send us a tweet if you'd like, @MiddayWIPR. So Dr. Sonalesis, in 2020, the class of 2020, your graduation rate was about 70%. Which is pretty consistent with what it's been system-wide for the past few years. Of course, there was COVID to deal with in the end of 2020. There's COVID to deal with now here in June of 2021. What's your expectation? I know the numbers aren't done yet, but what's your expectation about the graduation rates for your high school seniors this year? And you mentioned some of them are in summer school now, trying to get those last few credits done so that they can graduate. But do you have a sense of where we're going to end up once the dust is settled after this year?
Yeah, I mean, we're really going to have to, you know, dive into the numbers and kind of more formally verify. But we do have some bellwethers, some indication, Tom, that one, we will have more young people who will need the summer school ramp as well as the ramp beyond. And so fortunately, our college and career readiness team, Mavis Jackson's done a fabulous job in actually the last 2 years, even prior to the pandemic, really beefing up our summer offering. So we expect to see larger numbers of young people in summer and frankly in fall. This is not just a 1 year. And then second, I would point folks to some of the data that is coming around, that is coming out from some of our colleagues across the country and other major urban school systems that closed or ended their school year earlier than we do. And there we're seeing a range of anywhere from 7 to 12 or 14 points decline, percentage points decline in graduation rates. And so, you know, I hope that's not the case here, but we are looking across the country and we're seeing real serious declines. And so what that means, though, is, you know, what I've been saying is we've got to give young people a longer runway to recoup. We can't say, you know, you're going to do everything in the last 2 months of school or even everything in 1 summer. We've got to be able to give our young people more time and more flexibility to be able to reach those. But that's some of the early indications of, like I said, even some of the stronger school districts are seeing declines at 8% and some others as much as, you know, 12 and 14% decline in graduation rate for this year.
So. And then, of course, the next thing is, what's going to take to get Baltimore City Schools up to an 85%, 90% graduation rate? What are we going to be, what needs to happen for city schools to keep kids in school, to attenuate the dropout rate, which is right now about 13%, and to get them through, to get them prepared for either college or the workforce?
So I think some of the work, Tom, that we were doing prior to the pandemic, we're seeing some real promising uptick that really answers your question. So even prior to the pandemic, when we implemented individualized student planning with our high school freshmen, what we started seeing was year over year increase rates of on track. And on track is how we determine and predict how many young people will actually graduate. One of the things that we saw when we implemented really robust freshman year planning, where young people actually have another adult who sit down with them, you know, track their grades, track their interests, what their goals are, we were seeing you know, 8 to 10% gain in the number of freshmen moving into sophomore year who were on track, who were actually on track sophomores. So that's a promising practice that we looked at some other successful high schools across the country, like in Chicago. We've started implementing and we're seeing the uptick. The second piece that we know is that young people, there's a number of students who, when they're connected with robust career exposure, career certification, just career engagement period, that they actually have higher graduation rates as well. And so part of the work that we've done the last 3 years under the leadership of Dr. Pfeiffer and her team has really been to revamp how we do college and career, really CTE, offerings across the district. So one of the things that we realized is that our CTE offerings were clustered in only a handful of schools. And so over the last 2 to 3 years, we've been building out and expanding and frankly, more equitably distributing those opportunities across high schools. We've had partners in private industry that are helping us build this out. And again, the good news is that now, coming into the new kind of return in person, we'll be able to really do more of that at scale. So we're seeing, again, more young people graduate when we know they can be connected to real career options and exposure. And then in addition to that, the investment I mentioned earlier in advanced placement, and we have exponentially increased those offerings. What we hear from young people is when they can engage in those courses earlier, they feel better equipped and are better equipped to be successful at the college level. And really it is addressing needs of young people across the spectrum, whether you want to go immediately into a career, whether you want to go to college now or a bit later. And then the third piece is just how do we make sure that when young people return, particularly at the high school level, that they are able to make those connections to at least one caring adult and that there is a culture that supports their voice. We heard it overwhelmingly from young people over the last year and a half. So we actually have some promising practices. Again, we know we're seeing it in the data that those pieces work in addition to the work we've done in elementary and middle school. Where we're seeing that the investment in literacy is paying off. When more young people can read well, they're more likely to want to stay in school. They're less likely to end up in a prison pipeline. And what that means is that we have to see the continuum as a K-12 continuum. So we have some promising practices. We'll be investing some of the federal dollars that folks have been hearing about in those practices. And, you know, when we look across the board, those classes coming behind these prior to the pandemic, we actually had much larger numbers of kids on track to graduate on time.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I do want to talk about those federal dollars. Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email's midday@wypr.org, and you can tweet us @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around. We will be right back.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Thanks for hanging out with us today. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on Foreign Affairs. Melvin Goodman of the Center for International Policy and Johns Hopkins University will discuss President Biden's summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. And Krish Amara Vignaraja of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service will discuss the plight of Afghans who served as translators for the U.S. military now that the U.S. has committed to withdrawing their presence in Afghanistan. So we'll talk about all that tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Dr. Sonia Sonalesis, the CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. If you have a question or a comment, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And the way to get in touch with me on Twitter is @TomHallWYPR. So, Dr. Sonalesis, let's go to the phones to James in Baltimore, who does want to ask you about some of that federal funding, I believe. James, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom and Dr. Sonalesis. My first question was about funding for that federal funding and children who have been identified with multiple retentions and that multiple tiered student support services that should have been provided started back in 2018, because I met with people at North Avenue concerning this, because those children have multiple retentions, can be identified and given services at the beginning of the school year and throughout the school year to get them closer to grade level. That never happened. It wasn't funded, okay? The funding model never existed. You will have funding so that you can utilize multi-tiered student support for those children identified with multiple retentions. Will you seek that and put that money into that program to get those children so that they don't drop out, number one? And math test scores have never gone up within the last decade easily. No CEO and no chief academic officer has ever addressed the math issues, okay? So those two items are two items that I definitely want to hear you expound upon. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call. James, let's start with the federal funding. What's your expectation? Baltimore is due some $640 million over the next couple of years. What's your expectation as to how much of that the school system might be able to claim?
So I would say, well, one, we have funding that's coming directly to the school system. So that's about $430 million, I think, $420 million. My CFO will kill me after this, but I think it's about $420 million that is coming directly to city schools. There is additional federal funding that is, and that's, by the way, the last iteration of funding, the last wave of funding. We also received funding, as I think you know, for some of the early investments. Bottom line is, though, that there will be additional state money coming for particular things. And part of why we have been out engaging the community, we didn't just slap a plan together, roll it out to the community and say, okay, this is the plan, this is what we're doing. We have been spending the last month plus, getting feedback from teachers. We've been doing community-based, in every congressional district meeting that we've had. We have engaged with some of our community partners. We just put out a draft plan, and we're getting now feedback on that draft plan, because that plan should then drive where the allocation of those resources go. So when you look at some of the themes that are emerging and are reflected in that plan, one of the things we know, Tom, is that there is consensus that there needs to be an investment in making sure that the culture of schools is ready to welcome kids. You know, what will be the attention to SEL needs of students, mental health needs of students? That comes up. The other piece that a lot of that funding will be addressing is some of what James talked about. And that is where are the supports with regards to those young people who not only are behind from this year, but who have compounded, learning ground that we still need to help them make up. One of the good things, I think, is that the investment, as I mentioned earlier, in technology, the investment in the kind of one-on-one individualization that we've seen actually makes our options far greater than they were even 10 years ago when James was talking. We have seen far greater acceleration in small groups of students engaged in some of this than we had in any of the kind of MTSS structures we had before. The other piece
excuse me for one second. We have an email from a listener, and this is on my mind as well, because I just don't have it in front of you, and maybe you have it off the top of your head, and if you don't, then we'll find it. But do we know at the moment how many kids are testing at proficiency or above proficiency in math and in reading, for example?
Yeah, so some of those figures one, as everybody knows, there's been no state tests for 2 years. So the figures I'm using are coming from our nationally based formative assessment measures. And so we are just reviewing that end of year data now. We're seeing some upticks in the early elementary grades, which is where a lot of our literacy work took root. We're also seeing some increases in middle grades. What that translates to, when I entered, we were at like 14% of students at proficient and advanced. I think, you know, now we got up to about 18-19%, and we're seeing different increases from there depending on the grade level. But more than happy, you know, we're actually scheduled to share that more detailed data I think either later in July or August at a board meeting. But we're seeing some upticks. Again, last state test, we were around 18 or 19% in reading. The math, to James's point, has been flat, and we've made some adjustments over the last year with that. So we have not seen as much growth with that. Where we are seeing, though, the growth, we switched tests, so it was a higher bar. But we actually did have a lot more success earlier when I was CAO in math. And a lot of that was due to the teacher leadership piece in math, which we have begun putting in place again over this last year. So we are, again, it depends on the measure you're using, but our consistent measure is those kind of national indicators. And we are seeing that we, at least in reading, not as much in math, but in reading, we're actually outpacing on the growth over the last year. But I don't know if we've grown since the 14%. I don't know where we'll officially land this year, whether it'll be in the 20s. But we, you know, it's still too low. So, yeah. You know, I'm not doing backflips over it, but at least we have a trajectory of improvement, which is a good sign. It means we're moving in the right direction, but clearly it's not vast enough.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, you know, if we're well under half of the kids, you know, not reading and performing in math, you know, at proficiency, we got some work to do. This is Baltimore City Schools CEO, Dr. Sonia Sonalesis. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. We have a tweet with a concern about what the tweeter calls social promotion. She also has concerns about a grade fixing or changing situation. And she says, how will children receive compensatory education? I don't even know what that is. But can you address people's concerns about grade fixing and grade changing this notion of social promotion? You've talked about, and folks in your staff have talked about, holding back students this year, given the pandemic, who have fallen behind, not holding them back in the same grade. And there are reasons behind that. So perhaps you could discuss what those reasons are.
Sure. So the first thing is that, one, we're not just kind of passing students along. It's part of why we have the learning plans, and it's part of why we're investing in additional time and additional support. So it's why we're investing in tutoring. It's why we, in some schools, will be extending the time that young people have to make up the work. We'll start extra courses virtually for students. And a lot of the research behind that is frankly pretty clear. And particularly for Black and Brown students, the repeating of a year has been shown to not only not be effective, but to be detrimental. The study that I pointed to most recently, and this just came out a few weeks ago, shows that the method of providing extra time, be it after school, be it during intersession, be it during summer, and making sure that that extra time is targeted in the areas that young people need it, we are seeing to be far more successful, particularly with students that match the large demographic of the students we have in Baltimore City. In terms of the social promotion, you know, and I understand there that, you know, there's a switch in how things are done. I will say again, what is very true is just because you have been in high school 2 years does not mean you have standing as a sophomore. So the narrative of social promotion is incorrect for, you know, even according to MSDE. You cannot, you might stay in school for 2 years and think you are a sophomore, but your credits are very clearly indicating that you're not. So part of what we have been working on is making sure that more families and more students understand that. And that is where we have really had to shore up our work. It's why we've done the work around those individualized plans and why we're seeing success with that. We're seeing more kids, more students, particularly at the high school level, being on track, who actually are participating in that kind of planning, because young people are telling us, okay, well, now I know where I stand. You know, we thought they did, they didn't. Parents who are part of high schools that are doing this deep work and have done the deep work are saying, now we know earlier. And that's something we had to work on. We had a number of parents saying, I didn't know. I thought just because my child was in their third year of attending high school, that meant they were a junior. And the credits say that they still have not passed enough classes to be a junior. So where we're bridging that gap, we're seeing not only greater understanding, but we're seeing more young people who are actually on track to graduate. But there is no kind of just social promotion. And at the younger grades, again, it's part of why we're looking at tutoring. Most people don't look at tutoring before this year for, you know, for urban schools. It's something that, you know, professional parents, parents with means have long done. They've never talked about holding their children back. What they do is they go out and they hire a tutor to catch their children up. And what we're saying is all young people deserve that opportunity. I talked to a mother last week who said her first or second grader, I can't remember now which, was behind in reading, engaged in virtual tutoring faithfully. And she said, now she's not only back on track, but I want her to do some more work this summer so that she can get ahead. So I think the real question is, are we willing to give the supports to all children that some children have had the benefit of for decades? And so that's part of what we're looking at.
We do need to take a quick break, but before we do, there has been some reporting of various levels of credibility about grade fixing and grade changing. Would you care to address those?
Yeah, what I would say with that, Tom, is one, a lot of what's been reported are things that the system actually found out, that there was no deep kind of an investigation that an outside entity did. It's an outside entity reporting on an investigation we did. And we found that out based on the flags that our own internal auditing caught, because we do know that has to be reliable data. So this is not something that's going on kind of under the surface. The system itself flagged it. The system itself is holding school leaders accountable for the authenticity of that data. Now, if an entity goes out and reports it as their own finding, well, that's, you know, that speaks to the ethics of that entity. But I would say what would we have shown is we have done that work. We have rooted that out. We have done the training across the district to make sure that school leaders, that teachers, that everyone is on board. When we have needed to make adjustments and changes, we've done that. So our own auditing is what caught it. For it to be reported as if it is some, you know, smoking gun, well, that speaks to the ethics of the organization, not to the authenticity of the work we are doing to verify that what young people receive as grades are grades. And where there are issues, we address those issues. But we've done far more training on this than I think the narrative often speaks to.
We're going to have more with Baltimore City Public Schools CEO, Dr. Sonia Sonalisis. When we come back from a quick break, we'll talk to Luis, who has a question about his son who's on the autism spectrum. He's one of those kids that quite frankly benefited from the online learning situation as opposed to in school. So we'll talk about some of the things that we've learned in the school system this year that will carry over into next year when everybody's back in the building. Our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the Baltimore City Schools with school CEO Dr. Sonia Sonalisis. And by the way, next week on Monday, we're going to have Teacher Appreciation Day here on Midday. My guests will be Jesselyn Timpson, a middle school teacher, and James Tadaro, a high school teacher. Sydney Thomas is the 2021 Baltimore City Teacher of the Year, and Diamante Brown, the president of the Baltimore Teachers Union. So they'll join me on Monday. That's coming up next week. You are welcome to join our conversation with Dr. Sonalisis until the top of the hour today, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter @MiddayWYPR. Let's go to the phones to Luis, who is calling from Baltimore. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My son is 13 years old. He really improved all this year with the virtual classes. He's in the spectrum. He's autism. So he's sensitive to any sounds. If people is eating around or chewing in the classroom, affect him. So he got the benefits to be in his own house, in the computer, with the parents around. So he absorbed everything. He was behind, and now he's one of the first students in math, science, and I mean, he has improved. My question is, not only that, the reason that also he improved is because he wasn't worried about anybody bullying him or imitated whatever he did when he tried to comfort himself. So my question is if the city of Baltimore is going to keep doing these virtual classes because it's going to benefit kids that are in the spectrum.
Well, that's great to hear,
Luis. It's amazing, you know?
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. Thanks so much for the call. And Dr. Sonalisis, I mean, there are some things that you learned over these last couple of years that you might be able to carry forward. For example, will there be anything, will there ever be any more snow days? I mean, if there is a day when people can't travel because the roads are too dangerous, will people next year be able to just simply switch to online learning for a day or two until the weather clears?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things, and I think the caller, you know, really spoke to this, Tom, is that there actually were young people who did really well in this virtual environment. And so one of the things that we're working on now is how do we provide a longer term option for those families? What I would say, and those students. And one of the things I would say is that's part of what we're working on, really focused around the age group of the caller's son, that's really primarily secondary school, like the 13 to 18 plus. And we're looking at a much more robust option and offering for some of those students moving forward. This school year we'll have limited options for families who choose, but again, it'll be much more limited than it was last year. But I think this does beg the question we've been asking, and that is, what are the ways that we can actually leverage some of those findings? So yes, the greater flexibility has been wonderful for families. In some cases, it's been wonderful, you know, for teachers. Now, one of the things, though, that we've heard is that the hybrid teaching of having to be in person and online at the same time, that was incredibly taxing. I think that being said, though, there's also an acknowledgement that, you know, some of what we found, we really need to keep going. And that's a lot of what we'll be moving into this year, next year. Like I said, it's probably going to take us another year to build out a truly robust secondary option, but some families will be able to take advantage of some virtual this year. But no, there's never been in my kind of 11 years living in Baltimore, 11 plus now, there's never been this type of investment in technology. And we're hearing from teachers, from families, you know, let's not let it all go now that we're going back into school. And that is definitely something we're working on now.
And we talked earlier about graduation rates around the country expected to dip, partially because of broadband access, because people didn't have laptops, they didn't have access to Wi-Fi. You and I have talked about that before, and I've talked about it with a number of other folks as well over the last couple of years of COVID. Where does that stand in your estimation? Has the system been able to make, you know, significant strides in making broadband accessible to more kids?
Well, so I would say, one, we've made incredible progress with regards to devices. I mean, it's hard not to purchase 50,000 devices and not have some greater access. I would say within broadband, we are, and I always find it interesting that people ask the head of a school system about broadband access. And part of why I say that is because I think what we have seen, particularly in Baltimore City, with the mobilization of young people, of community groups, of the city government, is it actually, Tom, needs to be seen as a community question. And that is, as a community, are we willing to invest in broadband? Now, as a system, because of our prioritization of students, we've invested a great amount in hotspots, in expanding. We're making significant investments, unprecedented in the system, in broadband access at school levels. That'll take a few months to manifest in every school, but that started this spring, that will make sure that the Wi-Fi at the school level is stronger, that students have hotspots. But in terms of the overall progress, that's a community question. And that's going to require the whole community to prioritize it. School system will step in as we did beginning, you know, in March of last year. We'll continue to do that. But I do think really a question for our city is, do we care enough as a community, as a state, to ensure that this is front and center? And it's going to take a community effort.
Absolutely. And by the way, listeners, that is on our list to cover here on Midday. We're going to do a show sometime in the next few weeks about broadband access for everybody. It'd be great if the city of Baltimore simply had free broadband for everybody, regardless of where you are in town. Let's go back to the phones to Mark, who's on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Dr. Sonalesis.
Hi, thanks for having me. Listening to some of your calls, some interesting points, but I'm going to try to make my points as simple as possible. Being that we're just coming out of a pandemic, I think it's really allowed us all to take a step back and really realize how useful or not how we've been teaching and how it's affected the kids moving forward. So I think that in terms of a model moving forward, we need to totally look at what we teach, when we teach, and how relevant it is to the real world application, and how do we participate. So I have this phrase, I call it 5G and me. Say you're an 8-year-old and you're watching an AT&T commercial and you hear AT&T deploying all this technology. There is no correlation being made to an 8-year-old with respect to how is that relevant to me or anything
and
we see on TV when it comes to
Mark, let me just, because our time is limited, do you have a specific question for the CEO?
Yeah, my specific question is, how are we going to change the way we teach and what we teach moving forward? Because the Asian business model has been that of introducing kids to the knowledge that they're going to be taught and how it's going to be applied in the real world through virtual appliances. we're not doing that. So if you wonder why they are so engaged in technology moving forward, that's why.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Dr. Sonalesis, I mean, in terms of CTE, in terms of college readiness, how has your thinking about that evolved?
Yeah, no, and I would say that part of what Mark's call is getting to is some of, is connected to some of the work we were doing, again, around CTE, that this is not just kind of the sole property of three major high schools in Baltimore City. It needs to be something that all young people have access to. With regards to the virtual piece, he's absolutely right. What the last year and a half has forced us to do is to think through and actually pilot and introduce some technology around CTE exposure that we had not used before, but that has come to the surface and that we will continue to do. The other piece in terms of relevancy, I would say some of the relevancy is not just in technology. As a matter of fact, young people got tired of being online the whole time. But what the relevancy also needs to include is young people being able to see themselves in the learning, to see themselves in the curriculum while they are also learning new things. I don't think it's one or the other. And our Be More Me curriculum, that is the, really the hard work of teacher leaders. You're going to have one of them, Sydney Thomas, on. In your teacher section, like one of the things that we're learning is that when young people are learning about Baltimore, when young people get the opportunity to connect what happened 70 years ago, 100 years ago, with what they're experiencing today, with real leaders from Baltimore, what they're telling us is that actually makes a difference in how they feel about their learning and their desire to learn. So I think there's a number of ways that we're looking at engagement. Young people having access to music and arts. And you know this, Tom, I've talked about this, for years, that part of why we're committed to implementing our arts plan that we developed in cooperation with the arts community is because for some young people, the engagement, again, it's not technology. Their engagement is, I want to be able to sing. I want to be able to play an instrument. And so when we're thinking about engagement, what the last year and a half has taught us is that some of the things that we thought were just fringe, some of the things that we thought were a nice add-on, but didn't matter, like sports, like athletics, actually are incredibly essential to how young people feel about the content that they're learning in traditional classes. And it takes a variety of things. It's not just one thing. Technology has also shown us technology alone is not going to solve the engagement issue. We have a number of fronts. And it gets back to why we focus on wholeness. Young people are whole people. They're not just who they are in math. They're not just who they are with a laptop. It is about their interests, their gifts, and helping them make up the ground that we know they need to make up in order to be ready to really maximize those gifts.
We have about a minute left. What about, we have a listener asking on Twitter about FAPE plans. That's free appropriate public education for kids with disabilities. Any changes you expect to your approach to that aspect of what you do?
No, and it's a great question. It's actually one of the places where we got some early recognition from the state of being out in front because we wanted to make sure that particularly our students with disabilities, particularly those students who we knew were most vulnerable in this learning environment, were going to have greater access to whether it's their therapies, whether it is additional assistance. So we will be doing revised individual plans for those young people and really devoting some of our resources to making sure that those gaps that were still there, we can make up. So families should reach out to Deborah Brooks and our Office of Special Education to kind of really help support in that. But yes, it is a focus for us.
So yeah, so to clarify, there will be more resources available for students with disabilities.
Without it, we're going to have to, yes, because we've got to make up that time that those young people lost.
Dr. Sonia Sonalesis is the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. Dr. Sonalesis, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. We'll check in with you again probably at the beginning of next year.
Great. Thanks so much, Tom, for having me.
That's it for us today. Tomorrow, Krish Omara Vignaraja of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and Melvin Goodman of the Center for International Policy will join me for Midday on Foreign Affairs. Stay tuned now for Here and Now. That's on the way at the top of the hour after the news. And later today, check out The Daily Dose, hosted by Aaron Henkin, and the Chesapeake Connect podcast, a series of conversations about regionalism that I host. Come to Podcast Central. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to your NPR News station, member supported 88.1 WYPR.